So welcome everybody. This is a session entitled, Is Moz Accounting Responsible for the Woes of the Retail Life Insurance Industry? So many of you will have been in the previous IFRS session next door where we talked about what the new accounting standards might look like. The question here is whether Moz has actually contributed to the behaviour of the industry over the last 20 or so years we've had it, and does that mean anything for the possible adoption of IFRS? So we've got a panel discussion. I'm going to start with just an outline of what I see as the as where we are. My name's Jennifer Lang. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the Chief Actuary at MLC. I've also got a blog where I've written my thoughts on this called Actuarial Eye, if anybody's interested in having a look at that after the session. And I know a number of people have already commented on that post. Our second speaker is Siddharth Parameswaran. Siddharth has been JP Morgan's lead insurance analyst for Australia and New Zealand for the past 6 years. Previously worked for three and a half years at Merrill Lynch as an associate, covering insurance and diversified financials. He's a qualified actuary, having worked previously with QBE, looking after pricing, valuations and capital modelling, and prior to QBE he also worked with Tillinghast. Third, we have Brendan Council. Brendan's a director in EY's Financial Services Actuarial Practice based in Sydney. He's been actively involved in the development of new accounting standards for insurance contracts since 2007. He's part of EY's Global Reporting Standards Network, and in particular he's focused on the IASB's deliberations for the IFRS 4 and IFRS 9 projects. He's also a member of the Actuaries Institute's International Accounting Standards Committee, and you may have seen him next door in the last IFRS section. And finally, we hope, although he's tied up at a board meeting at the moment, Anton Capel. If we don't have Anton, Grant's kindly agreed to take his place, so thank you, Grant. But I will read out what I have about Anton, and hopefully those of you who are next door will have heard about Grant already, so we'll have the complete set. Anton recently joined AMP as Deputy Group Actuary and appointed actuary for NMLA. Previously, he spent 20 years working as a consultant with Towers Watson, finishing as head of Towers Watson's risk consulting practice in Australia. He's worked throughout Europe and the Asia-Pacific region, has experience with a number of financial reporting regimes, including US GAAP. He's a member of the Risk Management Practice Committee and the Life Insurance and Wealth Management Practice Committee of the Actuaries Institute. So I'm going to start by just outlining what I see as the issues, and then each of our speakers is going to speak for 5 or so minutes on their take on the issues, and then I'm hoping that we'll have a good discussion from the floor as well as from the panel. So I'm looking forward to hearing your comments and questions on the topic. So first of all, I just wanted to outline where we are. Australian life, retail life insurance made an 8% profit as a percentage of premium in the year to 2013. Compared with 19% as a percentage of premium 4 years earlier. Now, we all know that the way in which we report profits to APRA is somewhat takes into account catch-up for past experience, but that just says that we're not going through a particularly good patch in retail insurance at the moment. And, you know, there's many different topics at this forum that talk about that, also group, but I'm focusing on retail here. So issues that are often mentioned in companies reporting are things like commission, other acquisition expense levels. Most retail life insurance has high acquisition costs, either upfront commission rates or marketing costs or advertising. Over the life of the policy, the higher the upfront costs, the lower the profits. And that leads to our next driver, which is retention. Obviously, the longer a contract stays paying premiums, the more chance a company has of recovering those high acquisition costs. Claim rates, about half of the average retail premium goes into paying claims over the life of the policy, so obviously higher claims, lower profitability. And finally, for a disabled life contract, duration of claims is obviously a key driver. So how does Moz accounting contribute to our reporting of those issues and how they emerge in our profits? Issues that people have raised is, first of all, deferral of acquisition expenses. As you all know, acquisition expenses are effectively deferred on acquisition of the policy, so that effectively they're spread over the life of the contract. So if they're taken as expenses over the life of that contract, that means that if you use the profit line as the main way to measure the business, and that's a question, do people use the profit line as the way they manage their business, then whatever you do to acquisition expenses this year doesn't actually affect your profits very much. So there's not necessarily that much of an incentive to have a lower acquisition cost if that's the way you manage your business. Second point that happens with Moz accounting is that we smooth assumption changes over the future. So effectively, if the experience of the portfolio is gradually worsening, the worsening experience is spread over the future. You don't really see it happening in your P&L right now, unless suddenly it might when you have loss recognition. but until you get to that point, you don't see it emerging. Third, again, this is a special case, the spreading of claims costs over future years. So effectively, if you change your view of claims cost and also termination rates, if depending on what you use as your profit carrier, that spreads over the future life of a portfolio. So you don't necessarily see that emerging now. And effectively, again, if you use profits to manage your business, then you don't necessarily take action. You see, you can defer the problem to another day. And then finally, and this is probably a problem with most profit reporting methods, there's no recognition of cost of capital. So there is risk involved in insurance. Companies hold capital to guard against various risks of not having enough assets to pay claims, etc. But profit accounting doesn't allow for the cost of holding that capital. So those are the kinds of characteristics that I see about MOZ accounting which might change the way we manage our business. Now, there's a big question there of whether we do actually use profit to manage our business, and that's something that a number of our other speakers will talk about. But the question is, can you regard MOZ as part of the blame of where we are as an industry right now? So with that, I'm going to hand over to Siddharth. He's going to talk a bit from an analyst's perspective.
Thanks, Jennifer. So as Jennifer mentioned, My current role is to be an equity analyst covering the insurance sector, and one of the things that I wanted to highlight about insurance is that it is just one of the many sectors within the listed space, and it actually gets treated very similar to other sectors. So profit is one of the things that people do look at, and it's actually. If you have a look at these charts, what I've put there is actually just the one-year forward price-to-earnings ratio. So these are analyst estimates of profits, and it's the share price divided by the earnings per share looking forward 1 year. And you'll see that all the stocks that I put there are insurance stocks, and you'll see that typically insurance stocks tend to trade with a consistent on a consistent relative basis to the All Ordinaries. The reason for showing that is actually that earnings really do matter in the way the equity markets do look at it. I mean, other than the GFC and a couple of other blips that affected some of these stocks, every one of them has really traded on a flatline basis. And that's despite the fact that general insurers are highly cyclical and their cycles are very long. And, in AMP's case, I suppose they're having some difficulties recently, which ultimately may change. But you'll see that certainly earnings do matter, and I would say that most analysts, and in fact certainly most investors, would look at that ahead of any metrics like the embedded value or the like. So in terms of earnings, the MOZ really does matter in the way people do or investors look at the stocks. Life insurance isn't the only industry where we have a mismatch between what's reported as earnings and basically the cash flows of the business. I put some others there, some other sectors there which do face similar issues, such as mining, infrastructure, utilities. Many of them have high upfront investments which effectively require high upfront cash flows which they hope to earn back in the future. The one difference is, I think, that there's a lot more that is forecast in life insurance cash flows, and which are subject to estimation error than some of those other sectors. So in particular, mining, generally the forecast that you'll see in terms of depreciation of assets will be done on typically a five-year basis. Utilities, infrastructure, usually there'll be some defined contracts which determine, which provide some certainty over what period you can actually amortize some of these expenses. In fact, just to draw attention to the last point that I'm making, which is on general insurance, you'll typically find that most costs are actually expensed up front. It's partly, obviously, the way, in fact, it's wholly the way the policies are designed that allows that. But certainly, there's a I think that when you look at earnings, some of those differences are not necessarily captured in that in that one number. So the point of this slide is really just to say that there is a lot of uncertainty in the numbers that are forecast, and it can lead to some interesting and arguably problematic decisions in the way investors may look at stocks. And in particular, the one that I'd point you to is that, as I said, insurance companies, the earnings are just treated exactly the same as other industries. But you can find a company like a new life insurer may actually be able to show reasonable earnings very early on in its operation. And because I don't think investors actually have that full visibility on the uncertainty that some of its earnings may have, you may find that it would actually get treated just the same as any other stock. Now, Jennifer and I had a discussion about whether Moz really was to blame, and my strong view is that some of the ills of the life insurance industry really do come down to poor product design, and in particular, it's really that there is no alignment of interest between the insurer, the financial planner, and the customer. You know, a life insurer clearly loses from lapsing. A customer doesn't, and a planner can even gain by encouraging it. So clearly, there's a discrepancy between the interests of all the players, and that can lead to some tension. When we forecast these assumptions out for 20 years, obviously there can be some tension. And yet, I think that with Moz, we do tend to overlook that. There are actually reasons why there are incentives which could lead to current experience changing. So effectively, I made some points there that effectively one could be assuming irrational behaviour of customers and planners. I might just leave it at that and just ask Brendan to carry on with his comments.
Thanks, Siddharth. Some interesting views there. So hopefully I can add a few of my own, and in particular I'll make some comments from an auditor's perspective. In my view, I think it's pretty hard to lay the blame of the woes of the life insurance industry solely at the foot of Moz, but I think it hasn't helped. In particular, my observation's been management focus. And also auditors to an extent focuses very much on the current reporting period when it comes to profit reporting. As you know, under margin on services, in most cases, assumption changes are deferred into the future through spreading them through future profit margins. So in most cases, the pain also gets deferred into the future. While that's a pretty fundamental accounting principle, the principle of matching revenue to customer obligations. It's used in other accounting standards and good in theory. I think in practice it hasn't helped. I'll make three observations on the current state of the life insurance industry that I think are relevant for this discussion. Firstly, there has been a high focus on lapse rates and lapse experience recently. So we've got large deferred acquisition costs on our balance sheets. We're losing policies, and with them go those large deferred acquisition costs. We're writing off those deferred acquisition costs over very long periods of time under Moz, and so the experience losses that we've seen have been large, and that's brought focus on that particular assumption set. Secondly, portfolios in recent times are getting closer and in some cases coming into loss recognition. So when we get into loss recognition, as you know, all of a sudden any future assumption changes you make hit the P&L. My observation has been that this has sharpened the focus of management on those assumptions, the experience underlying those assumptions, and what to do about it. So claims management, repricing, etc. All of a sudden, all those things hit the P&L in the current year. And the third thing I'll just note also is the assumption changes under margin on services that do hit the P&L every year, being the economic assumptions, changes to market rates. Companies are have been for quite some time quite keen to separately disclose those in their investor reporting. So again, that shows focus on short-term P&L impacts. Where have actuaries figured in all of this? Well, I think my observation has been that actuaries have, by and large, done good analysis, good experience analyses, and have communicated those well to management. I think the control cycle framework is consistent with a long-term view and has served us well in this sense. But I think the challenge has been to get management and the business to respond early, particularly when we're, again, under marginal services, pushing the pain, in many cases, out into the future. So value measures may help with that, but again, my observation has been that these have fallen out of favour in the Australian market, at least over recent years. I'd be interested from the panel or the audience whether you agree with that observation. Some comments on auditors. So what do we do as auditors when we're reviewing an entity's financial statements? Well, there's two pieces of key assurance that we provide. Firstly, that the financial statements comply with the relevant accounting standards. And secondly, that they provide a true and fair picture of the financial position of the company at the reporting date and of the financial performance of the company over the period ending that reporting date. So the first of these mean that as auditors auditing a life insurance company, we spend a lot of time opining on the actuarial assumptions and the support for those assumptions. The second of these, though, does tend to shift the focus onto things that will have an impact this year, and in particular the management and business response therefore tends to be shorter term, focused on the P&L again. Just make some comments on IFRS. We sort of covered some of this in the previous session for those that were there. Will the new insurance accounting standard be the silver bullet that solves these problems? I think in my view the answer is no. Two changes that I think are key. One is the short duration yearly renewable term business will be effectively treated the same as general insurance is now. Which will affect the reporting of acquisition expenses when you write new business, as we discussed in the last session. And the second thing is that changes to assumptions relating to past claims will hit the P&L in the year that they incur that they are incurred, including disability income, outstanding claims reserves. So it goes to a point that Jennifer made in her introduction. Perhaps not so much focus on claims and claims duration at the moment. I think the new accounting standard potentially shifts the focus more onto those assumptions and the experience underlying that, which is a good thing. But I think it's probably going to shift the focus off lapse rates because we're no longer writing off big deferred acquisition costs. The other point I'll make as well is under the new IFRS repricing, we'll make changes to assumptions for poor claims experience. We won't be able to offset that in the valuation through future repricing. So in conclusion, I think my view, Moz, certainly has driven a focus from the long term to the current reporting period. Stakeholders, management, actuaries, auditors, I think have acted rationally given the frameworks that they've got in place around them, their requirements, KPIs, etc. However, potentially a different accounting framework might have produced a different outcome. including if there had been perhaps more focus on embedded value type measures. I'll hand over to Anton.
Thank you. I've only prepared some very brief comments so we can get to the discussion quicker. I guess I'm coming at this from two perspectives. I guess I'm up here as the corporate actuary, but I've only been a corporate actuary for a couple of months. I spent most of my career as a consultant and working across a lot of different markets, and particularly doing M&A across markets. And I've seen the way financial reporting influences deals and the way people think about things through financial reporting lenses. And I guess a comment from that, and I'll tell a little story towards the end, is that financial reporting often doesn't make a lot of sense, and I don't know that anywhere in the world there's the perfect financial reporting system, maybe not for any business, certainly not for life insurance. Coming back to Moz, and it's worthwhile thinking about what we had before we introduced Moz. So we had a nice net premium valuation basis that I don't think anyone would say was particularly useful. Moz has a lot going for it. It's market based. It requires you to form and tell the users of the financial information your sort of best estimate of the future. Certainly, when projection methods are used, the financial reporting framework should be extremely useful if people looking at the information, the analysts and investors actually do look at profit margins, look at the layer of detail behind the headline reported profit number. There is an alignment between profit reporting, profit testing, the way you sort of go think about your business, and value reporting under Moz. So you should be using the same set of assumptions consistently for all three purposes, and that in itself has a lot of value and should give investors and analysts some comfort. I think Sid or Brendan commented about value reporting being diminished or becoming less prevalent in this market, and that's certainly true, and I do think that Moz might have contributed partially to that, but I think the primary driver was accounting rules around the way subsidiary values were reported in accounts, and the banks certainly didn't need to market value their insurance subsidiries. It's probably the primary driver behind value reporting disappearing in this market. But certainly globally, value reporting, if anything, is on the rise. It's never really gone away in Europe. They've struggled with credibility of value reporting, but value reporting hasn't stopped. If anything, it's gaining traction in the US, and in part that could be because of the various quirks in US GAAP reporting for life insurers. And value reporting is becoming more prevalent in Asia, in many markets in Asia, but particularly Japan, where basically the whole market reports on an embedded value basis. But Moz is, if you like, a financial reporting friendly version of embedded value reporting. You get a present value of profit margins. So I think it is a very useful way of looking at life business. If people looking at the results are smart enough to dig a little deeper and understand what's going on underneath the headline profit figure. It's not perfect, and I think I'd agree with the comments that it can lead to, I guess, undue focus on, say, products that are at or near loss recognition. Is that the fault of Moz? I'd say not. I'd say it's the fault of people who focus on profit. And then the other main criticism is, has it sort of contributed to the unsustainability of the wealth protection market here? In particular, does it provide any incentives to reduce upfront costs? And I think that's a little unfair. I'm not sure that the role of a financial reporting system is to drive behaviour in the underlying business. So I guess I'd agree with the view that it doesn't provide any incentives for people to tackle the issue of, say, high commissions and so on. But I'm not sure that you should be designing a financial reporting system with that aim in mind. I do know that some of the people who supported YRT business being treated as short duration contracts under IFRS were taking that line from the perspective of it would change the profit reporting and therefore would put some pressure on the industry to tackle upfront costs. But really, as I said, I don't think it's the role of the financial reporting system to address that issue. It's the role of the business to do that. I guess final comment, coming back to where I started, is what's better than MOS? I really haven't seen anything around the world that I would classify as better than what we've got in this market. In all the various iterations around IFRS have, I think, highlighted that lots of alternatives are bad. And I think where we're ending up is something that's looking closer and closer to MOS as the deliberations continue. And I was finished with one story about how financial reporting can be strange, and it was an American company buying a target in Asia, and for various reasons it was a forced seller, and they were able to purchase this company for less than what it was worth, less than its embedded value. And sitting in the meeting with the acquisition team from the client, who was deeply concerned about this because of the impact that would have on US GAAP earnings over the next few years. That they were going to, I can't remember the detail now, they're going to have to write off the difference between, or the gain that they got on day one was going to sort of hurt them over the next few years. So as I said, if financial reporting makes you not happy about buying something for less than what it's worth, you've got to wonder about whether you should be focusing on financial reporting.
So thank you, Anton. We've got 20 minutes left, I think, and what I'm hoping is that we can get a good discussion going with the floor and also with the panel about the various topics that have been raised. So if there's anybody who's burning to get up and make a comment, feel free. Otherwise, I might come back to the question that's kind of been at the back of all of us is, does profit reporting actually drive behaviour, and should it drive behaviour? So that's somebody who's not in the room when I was talking to her about this topic said that we shouldn't be driving the way we manage our business because of profit. So therefore, we should not be changing accounting standards, as you suggest, to drive behaviour. But the question, I guess, is if profit reporting does drive behaviour, does that mean that we should actually take that into account in the way we design our profit reporting? So I don't know if anybody's got any comments on that. Bruce?
Bruce Vincent. I was pleased to hear that MOS isn't the cause of the problems of the retail industry and perhaps even the wholesale industry. I mean, clearly it's got to be product design, management actions and distribution models. However, there are some aspects of the way that we implement MOS that I think can narrow our view, I think, might be the way to respond to Jennifer's point there. I think the first thing is we talk about MOS profit margin. It's actually a profit and risk margin. It's not something that's locked in that's going to definitely occur. I think also the choice of carrier is interesting. I think it was 2007, 2008. By that time, I think everyone had moved to premiums as a carrier. And, of course, we've seen in other presentations that upfronts profit, and I think some of the problems with outstanding claims reserves would be different if we had not already booked all the profit. Another aspect is an interpretation of IBNR. I've always thought that to be assumptions about something's happened in the past and therefore should already be recognised in current periods now. At least the new standard when it comes in will settle that. But I think we've probably pushed the boundaries a bit on MOS and probably we get captured by the reporting system, and yes, it is the case that EV was important up until about 2003, 2004, and I think it's drifted away a bit, but in the end, the reporting shouldn't influence the economics, but as Anton has highlighted, it certainly can, and that's a problem.
Anybody from the panel want to comment on that?
Yeah, I certainly agree with those points. I guess to come back to Anton's point that we shouldn't be designing a financial reporting system accounting standard to address issues within the business, absolutely agree with that. And, you know, the accounting standards, margin on services matches revenue to customer obligations, that's a fairly entrenched accounting principle, and I think that's a good one. I guess my observation would be that if that companies are looking at profit outcomes and managing the business based on those profit outcomes, so that to me therefore suggests a misalignment between their KPIs and the accounting standard. So I guess not suggesting that we would change the accounting standard to solve those issues, but rather better align the management KPIs perhaps. And that was where sort of the point with EV where I was going, you know, is that a better measure that we can use to more appropriately align the business where the business should be going, rather than with an accounting standard, the accounting standard.
Yeah, I think from an investor's perspective, the difficulty that they do face is that they look at many sectors other than just insurance, and life insurance itself is, you know, very different to general insurance. Basically, all the nuances of detail about accounting are lost on investors once you get up to that stage. So, I mean, the reality is that I think all the points made are completely valid. It's just that when it gets to the perspective of someone who's looking at a lot of different things, there's two things you'll be judged on. One is dividends, and the other is profit. And senior management in companies, ultimately, if profit falls and, you know, I don't know, BNB rises, you know, people will be focusing on the profit. And if it's because of problems in the past, because management from 5 years ago reported profits too quickly, it's today's management who will suffer.
So I guess that says, Siddharth, that even if we don't think people should manage according to reported profits, the way in which the markets, for at least for listed companies, work is that we're driven down that path anyway.
Yeah, it's absolutely the case. As I said, it's just I mean that first chart that I showed you, which just shows you that the way the stocks trade, even though we all know that there are many cycles that influence earnings, the fact is that at any point in time, investors will go back, have a look at what is the price to earnings forecast on a stock, and that's basically. They may go a little bit deeper, but it'll you know, there wouldn't be many investors who go a lot deeper than that. That and dividends.
So does anyone have a comment on the question of whether that in particular has stopped the industry taking action on the upfront commission issues and the upfront costs issues? I guess that's a particular part of Moz reporting that I see as an issue, effectively, that we can delay those for a long time. Richard?
Richard Lyon. Just hold it. I think for the reasons that have been presented, yes, anything that gives you a simple picture and that picture is not really the picture you need to see is going to obscure all the actions that you should be taking. It's going to make you take them later. It's possibly going to make you take the wrong actions. But I think the issue with Moz is not so much that it does that, as that it was designed to do that. It was brought in to deal with a situation where new business cost a lot of money. And as actuaries, we're very good at hiding that fundamental problem. So we designed products that hid that problem by having surrender penalties. And that was very hard to then to identify what the profit was in a product like that. And Moz had to come along to tell us what the profit was in a product like that, in a way that meant that we didn't upfront the profit and we didn't shunt it all to the back as a prudential reporting basis that we had before would do. But the problem is it was solving a problem that was already on its way out. And so part of the issue is this philosophical thing that we're actually accepting as we start the process that upfront costs are high and immutable, when we should have been tackling that. But secondly, we now have, and I'm glad to hear, I wasn't in the session next door, I wish I had been, but we have a reporting basis that is complicated to employ for products that are very simple to understand until you actually put them through Moz.
I think anyone who's had to explain life insurance accounting to bankers, as I have many times, would agree with that point. It is actually quite a simple product, but we make it very complex. One point that other people have made to me is that we can't really blame any accounting standard for the woes of the life insurance industry, given that group doesn't really come under Moz. So I guess there is a point there. Does anyone have any comments on the differences between retail and group business?
Grant Robinson, it's interesting to make. I mean, I think there's a number of different drivers to group in there, but it's interesting in the sustainability life insurance. The first issue they focused on was the elephant in the room was the group risk insurance. Just really is like GI accounting, very simple. These sort of issues around deferring acquisition costs don't occur. Back in my mind is that just the nature of that product and then where it's sold, or is also the reason why it doesn't have high acquisition costs something to do with the fact that it actually hits your profit if you actually allow that to occur? And hence, so there is two sides of that. I think it probably does help with the acquisition issue. On the other hand, the claims issues, etc., should have been fairly apparent on a GI style account, even more so than Moz. You couldn't play games by hiding things and termination experiences and stuff in the GSC books, but I think it's just a data and set issue. So I think the different dynamics, complexities, people have got lost, and I think if you get back to more simple accounting, it may be easier for people to grasp what's really going on and focus in on important things, but there's still a challenge. And I guess that's the challenge of a bright actuary. You should be able to find some good, clear ways of explaining to management what's going on. And there's some very intelligent management around at very senior levels who basically said, I don't understand insurance accounting. And they are people who are smart enough to point out that CPI is an expense inflation of two different things.
So you're coming down on the side of actually profit reporting does drive behaviour to some extent if group hasn't
well,
got the same
I
upfront.
Back, I haven't actually gone back and checked all of the actual long-term incentives plans and the rest of it for senior management, but I got a feeling somewhere in there the profit reporting outcomes do kind of focus their minds, plus the fact that somebody else said effectively the long-term is nice, but if you're not going to be there for the long-term because you deliver 2 years bad, where is the profit, then it's a wider industry type thing. But the big issue in my mind in the DAC is it's so complicated that it's very hard to see it. Anybody actually identified on somebody's balance sheet, so you can't even easily see it, let alone what it's doing, and the fact that even if you stop writing new business under the current Moz, if investment markets are moving the wrong way, your amount of DAC that you actually have at the end of the year, even though you're writing no new business, can be higher than what you started with at the beginning of the year, which is really counterintuitive. Our accountants were really surprised when we did the original IFRS conversion and they began to suddenly realise this is nothing like a normal accountant's idea of what a DAC is.
Any comments from the panel on that question?
Yeah, I guess if we're comparing retail business to general insurance and group business, probably the key difference there, and Siddharth mentioned it in his part of the presentation. So general insurance, sure, most expenses are taken up front. But the key difference is that they don't have such high acquisition costs, and same with group business. So I think that sort of gets to the crux of the matter. And as we were sort of talking about in the last presentation, when we put retail business onto this new accounting standard, that's a different kettle of fish, because it does have very high upfront acquisition costs. As I said in the last presentation, my view is that I can't see how the industry is all going to all of a sudden go, okay, we're going to change our commission structures because of a new accounting standard. I don't think that's going to happen. I think some might, but some others won't follow.
I think it would be difficult for a listed insurer to continue to grow quickly in an environment where they are paying very high upfront costs, upfront commissions, and writing it off straight away. I think that would be very, very difficult to justify. You might be able to convince people for a year or two, but people have very short memories, and eventually people are just going to focus on the profit, and the reality is that you don't have any cash flow at the start. You're basically cash flow drained, so I think it would be very difficult to have that occur in a listed environment. I think I think it may help product design. I'm not sure. I mean, obviously it shouldn't be the reason, but the life insurance industry, as I said earlier, I think we can get into a situation where we think that we can project with certainty what happens over 20 years with incentives that are not aligned, and we assume that there's stability in that, and I don't think that's the case.
My response to that would be, if a listed insurer has, sure, they've got high upfront acquisition costs for the new business, but they may have the ability to hide that in their financial statements from the profits from their back book. So just in the same way that we're arguing margin on services is hiding stuff and pushing it out into the future, provided you've got a big enough back book, the bottom line for a listed insurer may not show that for
an existing one, for a new one, and there are new listed insurers.
Absolutely.
So Anton, I obviously weren't trying to get the.
Is that a bad thing?
Sorry.
So is that a bad thing?
I think that my point is that the incentives are not picked up in the way that we look at this at the moment. In that, basically, a financial planner, over time, and I'd argue this is the case, over the last 10 years, it's probably become easier for a financial planner to sell business than was the case 10 years ago, to sell a new policy. They have an incentive to churn through policies now quicker than they did previously, but the assumptions that were made 10 years ago in forecasting would have assumed a level...
That's a different issue, too. Should a company be allowed to grow?
Sorry, yeah. No, what I'm saying is, my point is that the information that would be coming back from a company that is growing quickly, if it's basically expensing high upfront costs, is basically one where they'd be showing losses, and I just think that they would change the way they would not assume that they'd be able to get them back over 10, 20 years.
So the interesting thing about that is, effectively, the capital needs are exactly the same. Even though, and it's the share market giving the capital, but the reporting is changing. So your argument would be that behaviour changes.
Yeah.
We've probably got time for one or two more points from the floor, so I just might see if anybody else wants to have a say. Eddie?
Remember a little bit about Moz was that it was supposed to try to help that you could put everyone on a level playing field to compare companies. Obviously, with the new thing they're talking about now, as you point out, you'll have very different results between an existing player who's got in-force business from their dad coming off and a brand new player. As an analyst, how do you compare an established company versus a new company? A new company could actually be writing business with bigger margins than an established company, which the long term is great, but certainly during that startup phase and probably for the first 20 years is actually going to be reporting lower profits. is that actually a good outcome? And therefore, I'd say actually MOZ is a much better way of allowing companies to equalise themselves, and so you can actually compare. I do put that in the context that there really is no listed life insurance company left in Australia anymore. I mean, life insurance is risk business part of it, such a small proportion of a bank or even AMP or even, you know, the Suncorps and the QBEs.
Clearly, you might disagree with that.
Sorry, your question is just basically, how will the market look at that in a different environment? I think the market, and this would be much better for the company itself, if the upfront costs were more aligned with something like claims costs. So if similar to general insurance, a fast growing general insurer, if it was growing in the commercial market, would typically have a premium that is a percentage of a commission that's a percentage of premium. I think those kinds of structures are more likely to exist in an environment where you do have to, you know, expense these costs up front.
Any last comments from the floor? Karan?
The other interesting comment I'd throw in is basically being a Kiwi, and I was over in New Zealand a few times, and over there I noticed one of the things on advertising on TV was people advertising basically direct players saying, okay, life insurance, retail insurance, we can match your existing insurance offer and give you a 20% save. And I think, how does that work? Obviously they're relying on the underwriting, but I think the other thing they're basically relying on is if they get enough of the people in, and particularly in New Zealand where the commission rates are not 100% but 200% of first year's premium, I don't actually have to pay those. Somebody else has already paid those and then done the underwriting for me. Effectively, I can actually cherry pick. And so I think that's a danger, as the big data people get better at this sort of stuff, and the Woolworths and the rest of it, they may find ways of getting to your customer base and offering to match your premiums, and they don't actually have those large expenses and acquisition costs to run. And overall, if you get the right dynamics going in the market, the commission levels will change. I remember way back when I first joined AMP, the level which we used to pay on wealth management products was enormous. And any agency force would have heard the conniptions if they thought they would only get 1 or 2% of the premium. They would have thought how they could ever survive in that environment, but they have and they've done and the change has occurred. But it's going to take a large number of things to drive that change. But I think there are fair risks out there.
Well, thank you to everyone, and particularly thank you to the panel. I guess I'd probably paraphrase Anton's point that it's a bit like Winston Churchill said, democracy is the worst form of government except for all the others. Perhaps MOZ is the worst form of financial reporting except for all the others. So would you join me in thanking the panel? Siddharth, Sandra.